series. The Book of Ruth is just a fascinating book. It's a wonderful story. And by the way, when you say story, sometimes people think of it more like as fiction. And it's not. I mean, this is a true story. And it's full of themes which appeal to the human heart. Even unbelievers appreciate this book. I might read it to you in detail sometime, but I was reading a particular book that told about Benjamin Franklin, who was, and the reason I'm careful in saying too much or trying to be too specific or use it as an illustration to really drive home a truth, it's not so much that. Benjamin Franklin, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in his spiritual life, I'll put it that way. But anyways, he was a believer in the Bible anyways, and he was talking to some men in France who were opposed to the reality of the Bible and mocked it and so forth. And he told them a story of, it was the story of Ruth, what it was. And he told it to them in lyric form and a narrative. And they told him, they didn't know the story. They told him, that's such a good story. You should write it down and publish it. And he said, it's already in that Bible that you don't believe. And anyways, even unbelievers are blessed by this, or they're at least they appreciate the kind of story that it is. But there's themes which appeal to the human heart. There's several themes that are in here. And I looked back over my notes when we went through the journey through the Bible. And I don't know if any of you have those notes with you. I'm not using the same notes. They're entirely different. But some of the themes that we looked at then, that would have been probably close to 2 years ago. But one of the themes that will be seen as we go through this, and what I'm going to do tonight is just an overview and an introduction to the Book of Ruth. And I've done a lot of reading and thinking about Moab, which was Ruth's background, but I'm not going to cover that this evening, okay? We'll probably get into that in the first paragraph next week as we think about the fact that that is where Elimelech and Naomi went to and where Ruth and her sister-in-law Orpah were from. That area. So we'll get to Moab more next week, and I'll talk about the history and the background of it then with the people of Israel. But the several themes that we'll follow through this as we go through verse by verse and section by section, some things that we'll see repeated, and I'm just giving you the whole list of them, or quite a list of them, but one of them is the sovereignty of God, much like the book of Esther. You know, the book of Esther does not have the name God in it. Or the word God or Lord, Adonai, Jehovah, anywhere in it. But it's been said before that the fingerprints of God are all over that book. And that Ruth does, of course, have the name God and Lord in here. But still, the sovereignty of God is seen in multiple ways throughout this, in small details. And I might say it's not so small, but the detail of even the choice of the field that Ruth went to. And, of course, I'm assuming that there's a bit of knowledge of the story with that, and we'll read it here in just a few moments. But the choice of the field that she went to, it happened to be, or it was her hap, okay, to light in the field of a man named Boaz, who was a near kinsman, okay? That wasn't an accident. God was behind every part of that, the small details. or the large details. The book of Ruth, I think, presents the lineage of David. Who was the king of Israel and then the one who was the, if you will, in a human sense, the progenitor of Christ. OK, and so, you know, the sovereignty of God is seen throughout this. And it's an encouraging book to look at and recognize, you know, the way that the Lord is working in the details of life just proves that he's in absolute control of everything that's happening. And there's also not only the theme of God's sovereignty, but also the theme of grace. That is here, and we'll talk about this more next week, but Ruth was a Moabitess. And remember that she, we've spoken in the last couple of weeks in speaking of Psalm 20 and 21, and the likelihood that David was at war with the Ammonites whenever he penned those two Psalms, that Moab was the brother of Ammon, okay, or the half-brother of Ammon. They were both the incestuous sons of Lot. And so, you know, these did not have a good foundation in life. And throughout this book, especially in the first chapter, speaking of Orpah, going back to her idols, okay, the Moabites were idolatrous people. We'll look at Numbers 25 as well, when Balaam was trying to curse the people of Israel, and it wouldn't work. And so anyways, one of the things that happened is he told them that they could commit fornication with the women, or the men and women of Moab and of Israel, and the kind of problems that it would bring, and that happened. So Moab was not a good connection with Israel, though it was just across the Jordan Valley and where across the Jordan River and then across the other side of the Dead Sea, just where it was. I should have a map for you next week, or I'm planning to. Even though they were close and neighbors, and a couple of generations before, many generations before, they were, if you will, even cousins from Lot and Abraham, they still were not a good people. They were not supposed to enter into the congregation of Israel for multiple generations and so forth. But Ruth was a Moabitess, and yet God saved her. God used a Levirate marriage to redeem her and to give her children to her dead husband. Okay, there was just a whole picture of grace that was seen in the life of Ruth. Grace, by the way, is typically described as God giving me something that I don't deserve. Okay, and she was a Moabitess, and yet God chose to work in her life in a great way. Another place where grace is seen here, and it's not often remembered, and it's actually connected more to Matthew's genealogy in Matthew chapter 1. Boaz was the son of Rahab the harlot. Okay. And you think of that. I've thought on several different occasions of the different women that were in the lineage of Christ, okay? And it's all a picture of grace, okay? And these are just the ones who we might say did bad things, okay, or came from a bad heritage, okay? You've got Rahab the harlot. You've got Tamar, who was the daughter-in-law of Judah, and after all three sons had died, the Judah went into her as if she was a prostitute, bore sons by her, and so she was in the lineage of Christ, okay? And then Rahab the harlot, then you've got Ruth the Moabitess, you have as well Bathsheba, okay, who was in immorality with David. People have questioned that as far as, you know, he was the king. There was an authority differential there, and I recognize that in our concealed carry classes. They were talking about the differential between a man and a woman, and I get that. David was king, but she was also up on the roof. Okay, she knew that she was visible. And so anyways, all of that to say that those were women that were in the lineage of Christ, and yet in grace. Okay, in spite of their background, in spite of who they were, in spite of what they had done, God still used them. And so grace is a theme that is in here. And as I mentioned, Boaz was the son of Rahab the harlot of Jericho. And then you've got as well the picture of redemption. Brother Mike used this idea, the picture of salvation that is here, that he was the kinsman redeemer, or that he was the one who bought her. Okay, and that's the picture of Christ, that he's the one who bought us, redeemed us from sin. It's the same word for redemption. There's the redemption of Naomi of Bethlehem, her daughter-in-law. And I'm still chasing down some things on this, but there are no accidents in the scripture, of course, the things that are in here. But do you remember in the Old Testament how often an Israelite could sell his inheritance, or how often, or how it would come back to him? Okay, the 7 years, okay, that we have in that it was there. They were down in Moab for how many years, if you remember the story? 10 years, okay? And so that has already flipped that cycle, if you will, there. And yet the land of Elimelech is purchased back for Naomi, as well as for Ruth, who was the offspring, or her husband was the offspring of Elimelech. You also have not only the picture of redemption of Naomi, as well as her daughter-in-law Ruth, there's also a tremendous picture of faith in some of these people. I like to refer to Old Testament people who were followers of God as people of faith. Okay, we understand that what they knew of salvation was different than what we do. Many of them, they knew the promise of the Messiah, but they didn't know the specifics of Jesus as we do. They didn't have the whole revelation. Revelation's progressive, as we say. They didn't have all of that, but they were people of faith. Okay, they responded to what had been revealed to them at a particular time. And here we see that both in the life of Naomi as well as in the life of Ruth. There's a picture of faith as well by Boaz. There's the absence of faith, evidently, in Orpah, the other daughter-in-law who returned to her idols. But faith, Naomi's return to Bethlehem. And even though she went back, and when she did, she was saying, there is now, or you can now call me Mara, which is bitter, instead of Naomi, which was pleasant. Still, you remember a few weeks ago when I preached the message, what to do when you fail. They used the lives of Abraham and of Moses and of David and of Peter and of Thomas and those five men who all failed, okay, as far as in a particular thing that was before them. You could say the same thing of Naomi here, that with her husband she went away from Israel. They went down to Moab because of the famine, and yet she realized it's time to go back. When she heard that the Lord had visited his people again in Bethlehem, she was ready to go back. And so Naomi's picture of faith, not only in the return to Bethlehem, but I think also in her orchestration of circumstances, as far as when she told Ruth, okay, you need to go and go to the threshing floor where he's working tonight. Stay working in his field. She told him that first. And then you need to go tonight. He's the man who's a near kinsman. The Lord has been great in blessing us in having you go to his field. Now go and tell him that he's the kinsman. Okay, which he knew, okay, but tell him that, and that whole picture, as far as her orchestrating the circumstances, and by the way, I don't think orchestrating circumstances is necessarily outside of faith, okay, there are some things where I can look at something and say, I realize this is the will of God. Do you remember what Eliezer said whenever he went to find a wife for Isaac? He said, I being in the way, the Lord led me. Okay, and so there's almost together with that a synchronization of his activity and then the Lord's working as well. So not only Naomi is demonstrating faith in God's design here, but also Ruth's commitment to Naomi's God. One of the most poetic sections in the scripture is where, or is at the beginning of this chapter one, whenever Naomi says, or when Ruth says, your people are going to be my people, your God is going to be my God. And she goes through that whole list of things, which we'll read in just a few moments. But that's her devotion, okay? She is saying, I'm going to follow the God that you follow. Your God will be my God. And then she goes to the point of saying, where you die, I will die. Okay, is that not devotion? I mean, that's almost marriage vows. I mean, I'm not comparing that, but I'm just saying those are the kinds of things that say, okay, you know, that I'm committing my life to you. And she does this. And so there's faith that is here. She commits herself to Naomi's God. There's also a picture of devotion, commitment, Ruth's commitment to Naomi. You understand that, and we don't know why Ruth did not want to return to her family in Moab. I personally think that it's probably because even though Elimelech and Naomi and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, even though they were in Moab because of a lack of faith, if you will, or the reality that because the famine was bad in Bethlehem and in Israel, that they had gone to Moab, that even though that was the case, they were still a family of faith, okay, meaning that they were still a people. They didn't adopt the idolatry of Moab. They were still worshipers of Jehovah. When Naomi went back to Bethlehem, it was because of that, all right? And so evidently there was something, even though Naomi had been burdened, even though Naomi had gone through some very difficult times when she was down in Moab, evidently she still was demonstrating a degree of faith. She was still committed to God, okay? That being the case, that's probably what it was. I think that there was faith that had grown in Ruth's heart, and Ruth was ready to forsake her family, whatever it may have been. Some people speculate that maybe she came from a poor family. You know, maybe it was an inconsequential family and that she had nothing in Moab to hold her. That's all speculation, but we do know that she had been married to a man who was a worshiper of Jehovah for about 10 years, and that her mother-in-law and her father-in-law, though he was dead before she was on the scene, likely, all of that to say that she had been introduced to the worship of Jehovah. Okay, and she adopted that. So there's devotion, her commitment to Naomi. And then when she said, your people are going to be my people, speaking of the people of Bethlehem and of Israel, your God is going to be my God. Those all demonstrate a commitment. Okay, those are things that she has chosen to follow in life. Those all, of course, devotion, commitment is something that you and I would look at as an example. Boaz's commitment. One of the things I've always appreciated about Boaz, there's two things that are specific. Actually, there's quite a few as far as a character study, but two things especially that I think of in this. His commitment to accomplish the task of the kinsman as soon as possible. When he told Ruth after she had gone and met him at night in the threshing floor and so forth and told him he was the near kinsman and asked him to spread her skirt over him or his skirt over her and so forth as symbolizing that I'm expecting you to take care of us now. When she went home that the next morning, when Ruth told Naomi what had happened, she told him, the man will not rest, okay, until he's accomplished the thing. I'll tell you, I'm not really a bad procrastinator, but there's times that I just don't like to do things. But sometimes I'll just look at my to-do list and think, I'm just going to do it right now, okay, and I'll just do it, okay? Not that I really want to. But there's just something inside of me. Maybe it's the Holy Spirit. Maybe it's conviction. Maybe it's just something telling me, okay, just do it. Okay, it's the right thing to do. And so if it's a phone call, if it's an email, or if it's a task that I need to do, I'll just do it. Okay, I'm not always good at that. But the picture is here of Boaz that he just did it. Naomi said he's not going to be at rest until he accomplishes this this task as far as the kinsmen. But do you remember what he had told Naomi, or what he had told Ruth that night whenever she came to the threshing floor? He said, I'm glad to redeem you, but there is a kinsman that is nearer than I. There's someone else who has the right to redeem you, to buy back your land, and actually to marry you, which, by the way, Boaz knew that she was asking him to marry or to buy her as, if you will, a wife, but to join in marriage. He knew that. The whole Levirate picture of marriage, because of the fact that her husband was dead, he knew that she was a widow. He knew how she had treated her husband and so forth. That's said in chapter 1. In chapter 2, he knew all of this. And so in verse 10 of chapter 3, he says to her, you haven't gone after young men. Okay, the picture is there that he's thinking about this, okay, that he must have been somewhat older. Speculation is that he's never been married at this point. But he acknowledges that there's a relationship that you're anticipating and you haven't pursued young men, but you've instead come here to me. But even though he knew that, okay, he still says there's somebody else who is nearer than I am. Okay, and whether it was for the romantic purposes or for the financial purposes, he still had the integrity to say someone else has the first dibs, if you want to use that phrase. Someone else has first right at that. And so both of those demonstrate integrity, that he was willing to make sure that things were done the right way. So Boaz's commitment to accomplish the task as the kinsman as soon as possible, in his integrity to let the others still have their right and so forth, but then to accomplish it. Another theme that is here is love. And in the outline, that's one of the words that we'll follow all the way through. And there's different kinds of love. There's, I believe, love that Ruth has for God. But there's also love that exists between Ruth and Naomi. I was reading a commentary on this, and it says this is quite interesting considering the phrases or the understanding that most people recognize as far as their mother-in-law. Now, I thank God for my mother-in-law. I understand that not everyone has the same kind of relationship with their mother-in-law that I have with mine. I've said many times I will not tell a mother-in-law joke because the mother-in-law that I have has been a specific and a special blessing to me for years, and I'm very, very thankful for her. But Ruth and Naomi, it's mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, okay? And yet there's still a strong commitment that is between them. And then, of course, there is the picture of love between Boaz and Ruth, the blessing which God brings upon that. And sometimes we fail to recognize or see in a story such as this one that there is actually love there. We almost look at it and think, well, this is just Old Testament custom. That's the way things were supposed to be done. And yet you can sense in the conversation that is between Ruth and Boaz, especially with Boaz towards Ruth, you can sense that there is a heightened feeling and an emotion that is there. And so there is love. And I believe it's genuine love in this, not just a romantic love like people will often express on the what's the TV channel? Hallmark, okay, the Hallmark movies, that they say that there's just 40 different actors that play the same movie over and over again. They call those chick flicks, I think. I haven't seen very many of them at all in my lifetime. But more than that, that is here, okay? You remember how I've described love to you, and it's not original with me, but I believe it. The genuine love is seeking to see the will of God accomplished in someone else's life, no matter what it costs me, or doing whatever I need to see the will of God accomplished in someone else's life. And Boaz definitely did that for Ruth. Ruth did that for Naomi. Naomi, in essence, did that for Ruth as well. And there's just the picture of love that is demonstrated with all of these individuals that are here. So those are the themes that are there. And I'm spending too much time on this. I'll tell you what I wanted to do in a little bit. The historical context, okay, and that was just kind of the introduction with some of those themes. The historical context, several things that are in this. The author, according to Jewish tradition, would be Samuel, the one who wrote this story, and that's probably the case with this. The date of it, there's two different dates to keep in mind, that the story probably happened around 1300 BC, okay, which would have been a couple of hundred years before David. As far as then, you think of the four generations or so, maybe five that were in there. So around 1300 BC, maybe a little bit later than that, meaning in the 1200s. But then the writing of it would have been between 1020 and 1010 BC. And those dates are a little bit more certain. That would be the period when Samuel was moving off the scene and David was moving on the scene to king or as king. And so right around that time is when it would have been written, though the story itself would have been would have happened a couple of hundred years earlier. And there would have been oral tradition, which would have carried that down. It was written during the life of David, but what happened was several generations earlier, during the time of the judges. Okay, that's when Ruth happened. If written by Samuel, then it would have been after the anointing of David, but before he was king. And the book concludes with the birth of David, and so the author, whoever wrote the story, and I think it was Samuel, would have known who David was. Okay, so whoever it was, they recognized David has been born, even though it would have happened a couple of centuries earlier. The recipients, the people to whom it was written, of course, the people of Israel, they were living with Samuel as the last judge and probably during Saul's reign. It may have been a transition not just from the judges to the kings, as that is happening, okay, in our Old Testament history, transitioning from the judges, the cycles of revival and then rebellion and then judgment and then revival and rebellion and judgment and so forth. So it may have been not only a transition from the judges to the kings, but also from King Saul to King David. Okay, this would have been, if it were in our day, we would have said propaganda, though it's inspired. But you know how it is. Whenever Mike and I were just talking about the political scene, okay, you know how it is. This would have been beneficial for the nation of Israel to have realized that David is coming on the scene, and Samuel would have been, if Samuel was doing this at this time, under the inspiration of the Spirit of God, this would have been a benefit to the nation to realize God is working now with David. Okay, Saul is moving off the scene. David is moving on the scene. And so that timing would have been very appropriate for this book to have been written. Okay, and so when you think of Samuel, who is likely the author of this and the timing of it, it probably was a help for David in that transition from Saul to then David being the king. The book of Judges reveals the moral depravity of the people of Israel, the time in which this happened. And Ruth demonstrates that a remnant of faith still existed. Okay, and really we might say Naomi demonstrates that a remnant of faith still existed, as well as Ruth, as well as Boaz. Okay, these would have been a people of faith at the time of the judges. It's therefore bright light, if you will, in the darkness of the judges. Now, I've got about 15 minutes. I read somewhere this afternoon, I've read through the book several times recently, that it takes about 15 minutes to read through it. Okay. My goal is 7:45. And anyway, and I'm a fast reader, but I'll try not to be so fast that it's confusing. But you can fill in the outline as we go. You ready, Gardner? Okay. The outline that is there. First of all, love's resolve. Okay. Love's resolve. And that is God's dealing with Elimelech, with Naomi, with Mahlon and Chilion, and then also, of course, Ruth and Orpah. The scene of the first chapter would have been Moab. And the first part of this, verses 1 through 5, is the departure of Elimelech. And this is the time that he left Bethlehem and then went down to Moab, which actually it was more to the east than it was to the south, but we don't know how far he went into Moab. Now, it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. This is verses 1 through 5. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons, and the name of that man was Elimelech. And the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion, and Ephrathites of Bethlehem Judah. And they came into the country of Moab, and continued, or lived, and dwelled there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left, and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, the name of the other was Ruth, or the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelled there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died also both of them. And the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. So that's the departure of Elimelech down to Moab from Bethlehem, Judah, in Judah. And then you have the second part there, letter B, the despair of Naomi, verses 6 through 13. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord, notice that's all caps, and so that's Jehovah, had visited his people in giving them bread. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return into the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you, as ye have dealt with the dead, and with me. The Lord grant you that ye may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. Her anticipation was that they would find a different husband or a new one. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, surely we will return with thee unto thy people. And Naomi said, turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters. Go your way. For I am too old to have an husband. If I should say, I have hope. If I should have an husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would you tarry for them till they were grown? Would you stay with or for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me. And so there is her despair, and that'll be the second paragraph that we consider. Then the decision of Ruth, verses 14 to 22 of chapter 1, and they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. An important statement there. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. And here's that phrase that has been considered as beautiful poetry. For whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more. By the way, you notice that Ruth used the word Lord, all caps, Jehovah. Indicating, I think, that she was a person of faith here. And more also, if aught but death part be thee and me. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So they two went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And they said, is this Naomi? And she said unto them, call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. By the way, how full was she actually? Ruth? Okay, just an incredible person. She came back in that sense very full. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. Love's response, number two, the second chapter, and this is Ruth's determination. Love's response and Ruth's determination here. And the scene would, of course, be the fields of Bethlehem, but specifically the fields of Boaz. Chapter 2, first of all, verses 1 through 14, the destiny of meeting Boaz. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech. And his name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him, in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, this is Ruth's idea, go, my daughter. Naomi then acquiesces and says to go. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And her hap, happenstance, chance, but really God's direction, was to light on a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. By the way, you notice that here they're using the name Jehovah. OK, so even though this is in the time when the judges ruled and Israel was typically in a bad state, then here's a few people that are still giving spiritual salutations, if you will. Behold, Boaz came, the Lord be with you. They answered him, the Lord bless thee. Then said Boaz unto his servants that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. Okay, that's when Boaz knew. Okay, she's with Naomi. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. By the way, it was her right to do, but she still asked permission. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now, and she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from thence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men? Or he's telling them that they shall not touch thee. When thou art athirst, go unto the vessels, and drink of that which the young men have drawn. Then she fell on her face, and bowed herself to the ground, and said unto him, why have I found grace in thine eyes? In other words, he's extending more to her than normally would be extended to a regular gleaner that was there. Boaz, seeing I am a stranger, you've taken knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger. And Boaz answered and said unto her, it hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother in the land of thy nativity, and art come unto the people which thou knewest not heretofore. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord. Incidentally, beginning a life of faith often begins a new family. Okay, that's what happens with a church. Under whose wings thou art come to trust. Verse 13, then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaidens. And Boaz said unto her, at mealtime come thou hither, and eat of the bread, and dip the morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and was sufficed, and left. At the end of the day. Then the second half of that chapter, verses 15 to 23, there's definite provision for Ruth. Verse 15, let her be definite provision for her. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not, and let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her. And leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up, and I read that that's about 5 days' worth of food for two people. And so that was, almost a week's worth of food work for them. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. And her mother-in-law said unto her, where hast thou gleaned today? And where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought or worked, and said, that man's name with whom I wrought this day is Boaz. And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord who hath not left off his kindness. By the way, I don't think I'm using the same inflections that probably Naomi was. Okay, she probably was showing a little bit more excitement. The man is of near kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. And Ruth the Moabite said, he said also, or said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. In other words, he's given me a place to work for the rest of the harvest. Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. Chapter 3, Love's Request. And I'm not going to go into it now, but I told you the story of how my daughter and Jeb first made connections. And I actually texted her on the way to church tonight. Josiah was driving. I wasn't texting while driving. And I said, you know that in essence, Ruth asked Boaz to marry her. So anyways, that's another story for another time. It just struck me funny. Love's request, Boaz's decision. The scene here is the threshing floor. Chapter 3, first the desire to marry, verses 1 through 11 of chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee? And when she speaks of rest, she's not talking about a good 8 hours. She's saying, I want to find rest for your life, okay? I want you to have a husband. I want you to be at rest in this life, that it may be well with thee. And now is not Boaz of our kindred, and with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man, until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie. And thou shalt go in, and uncover his feet, and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. In other words, he'll take over from there. And she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me I will do. And she went down into the floor, and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly. By the way, this was interesting, and it hadn't dawned on me much in years past. You realize that Bethlehem, the reason that Elimelech and Naomi had left Bethlehem was because of famine. Okay? And they've heard that God has visited his people in Bethlehem again, so the famine's gone. Okay? That's one of the things that's happening now, is that the famine is over, okay? And so the crop is abundant. They're all going to be happy, okay, because of this. And no matter what they were eating and drinking at the time. Verse 8, and it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself. It means he was startled. And behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, who art thou? And she answered, I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. And the idea of spread thy skirt is not the literal sense of put your robe over me, but it's the figurative idea here that I'm expecting you to give provision and protection to me. For thou art a near kinsman. Verse 10, and he said, blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followedst not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest. For all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And then verses 12 through 18, letter B in your outline, the decision's delayed. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I. This is integrity on his part. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform unto thee the part of the kinsman, well or good, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of the kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of the kinsman to thee, as the Lord liveth. Lie down until morning, and she lay at his feet until the morning, and she arose up before one could know another. And he said, let it be known that a woman, or let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Also he said, bring the veil that thou hast upon thee, and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, and she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done to her. And when she said, these 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. Then said she, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall. For the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. Okay, he's specific. And then chapter 4, love's reward, the family destiny. And the scene here is, of course, the city of Bethlehem. Letter A, dealing with the kinsmen, verses 1 through 12. Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took the 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit ye down here. And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsman, Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. By the way, I just read a book last week called Crucial Conversations, and this would be one. Okay, where their principles, he just takes the bull by the horn. He just goes and he deals with it as it needs to be dealt with. And everything fell into place. Verse 5, then said Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. That's the Levirate marriage. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. In other words, he was fearful then that if he did raise up children to Ruth's husband, who was dead, then that son would also get part of the inheritance, and he didn't want to have to split that. Now, this was the manner in the former time of Israel, verse 7, concerning redeeming and concerning changing. For to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor. And this was a testimony in Israel. By the way, some have looked at this very critically, and of course, it'll be a little while before we get to chapter 4 as far as in detail. But I read something recently where the idea of that was that when he took his shoe, that he was symbolically saying, I will stand in his place. Okay. Verse 9, and Boaz said unto the elders, and unto all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren. And from the gate of this place, ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate that has come to thine house, all that were coming to the gate, and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem, and let thy house be like the house of Phares, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. And then finally, the final part of this, David's genealogical line. And again, this is probably where Samuel was leading the whole time. Verses 13 through 22 in our final point or section for this evening. Verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went into unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. The women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that this his name may be famous in Israel, and he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than 7 sons. Remember, she said that she had come back empty, but she actually came back with this woman that others now look at and said she's been better than 7 sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi. And they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now, these are the generations of Phares. Phares begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram, and Ram begot Amminadab, and Amminadab begot Nashon. Nashon begot Salmon, and Salmon begot Boaz. Boaz begat Obed, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. And so there is the lineage of David. So I am 3 minutes past time on this. So anyways, that's not too bad. I guess you'd say that. But I hope whet your appetite for what we're going to be looking at as we go through this section by section and looking at it. By the way, I think I had it in your notes. The outline that I used here is not the one that I'd used in the A Journey Through the Bible. This one's from a Liberty Bible commentary that I got from my grandma years ago. But as I was studying this, I liked the structure of that, and so that's what I'm using for this. All right, we'll pray, and then we'll have our time of prayer together. Father, thank you for this book. I pray that as we look at it, that you would use it to edify us, that you would use it to encourage us, to help us to see your working, to see the way that you graciously work in the lives of people. Lord, I pray that you would help us to learn lessons from the lives of Naomi and Ruth and Boaz, and Lord, even some from perhaps, as we would say, Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion and Orpah. Father, I pray that you would help us to take warning where we should, but then also that we would be encouraged and built up as we look at others. And then, Father, ultimately, we recognize this is a book which has given the lineage of David, and help us to see that you always had a plan, not only for David and the king of, or on the throne of Israel, but for the Lord Jesus on the throne of Israel. And so I pray that you would help us as we look at this to see the small picture and also to see the big picture. We ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, you can take your prayer list.